This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 455, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 455. I realize I say Pick of the Week really fast.
Pick of the Week.
I am Josh Flanagan. I am here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Paul Montgomery is off on assignment.
We're doing back in duo style.
Yeah, apparently I had to be reminded of this by Connor. We used to do this sometimes.
Way so, back in the old days, when someone couldn't do the show, we just did a twofer.
So we're on our own here. We'll have to see what happens.
We're the Simon and Garfunkel of comics podcasting right now.
We're the Simon and Simon of
that's a good one.
Geek culture. Can I take that back?
Could we be Hall & Oates?
That's the best one so far.
I like Simon and Garfunkel, though.
I said Simon and Simon.
Simon and Simon is a good one as well.
Is it better than Simon and Garfunkel? Because here's the thing. If we're Simon and Garfunkel, we're going to have to pick sides. And I think
here's what's really great about this, though. You just mentioning that means I'm going to have to use the Simon and Simon theme song.
Yeah.
Because the Simon and Simon theme song was awesome.
See, I don't even know what that is. I feel like you were watching TV before I was.
We could be Hardcastle and McCormick as well. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. The Falcon and the Snowman.
The 80s was awesome.
I almost said Remington and Steel, but that's not a show.
Anyone who says the 80s wasn't awesome TV, well, punch in the face.
Starsky and Hutch?
Starsky and Hutch was also, that was the 70s, though.
I know, but Chip, Punch and John.
Chips. All right, let's get on with this.
We are a fanboy. Believe it or not, this is a comic book show. It's about comic books. Every week we read a bunch of them. One of us picks the best one they read. We call that the pick of the week, and we talk about it here on the podcast. We'll talk about other books from the week that we have a thing to say about and some other stuff. We'll answer some questions and hopefully have a good old time. Before we get going, we're going to talk about what happens in the books. So there will be spoilers. We will be talking about plot points. If you are not down with that, be aware and take commensurate actions. Connor, it was your pick. Carry on.
I'm Gerald McCraney, aren't I?
I don't know. Was Gerald McCraney in?
He was Simon and Simon. He was one of the guys.
I didn't know that.
There was bald brother and brother with the great hair, which means I'm Gerald McCraney.
Uh-huh.
And you're Jameson Parker.
Wow. Did you knew that without looking?
No, I knew Gerald McCraney. I had to look up Jameson Parker.
Okay. Gerald McCraney to me, no matter what he shows up in,
was a Major Dad.
That's what he's always going to be. Major Dad was the bad guy in Deadwood.
See, for me, when Major Dad started... And we're going to get to comics in a minute. Everyone can just hold on.
Why?
When Major Dad started, he was the Simon and Simon guy.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But then Major Dad was enough of a force that he became Major Dad.
Well, this is like Ron, and those of you who have just started listening in the last year. So Ron is our former partner who left us.
Right.
Ron would never watch The Shield,
right?
Because he didn't like that guy from the commish. God. I know it's, but again, but we like he wouldn't have liked The Shield.
No,
it's not his thing.
All right, let's talk about sex. Baby.
You're not a cop. You never were.
Sex 16 is the pick of the week, and it's really interesting because it's a comic that's such unlike every other comic out there, and not just because it's called Sex and has a lot of sex in it, but it's pacing, and I see a lot of complaints about it online, and it's even addressed in this issue in the letters column about how it's not structured and formatted like your traditional monthly comic. You know, there's not the monthly payoff or the monthly cliffhanger. And it frustrates a lot of people. We even got some comments about it on our Facebook page when we announced that the pick was, that people had stopped reading it because it was slow or whatever. The thing is, Sex is a novel, and we're just happening to get 22 pages every month.
We're doing this like Dickens.
Right.
I just compared Joe Casey to Dickens.
Well, there are dicks in the book, so...
There's a good deal of them. One of them pointed right at me.
And that's what I really love about this book and the story is that it is a novel in comic book form, and I think it's very similar pace wise to Lazarus in that sense, mm-hmm. in that we're really just getting a long form story. I mean, I'm sure given his druthers, Joe Casey does like comics, but you probably want to put this out as like a 400 page book to tell his whole story rather than 22 pages. I really like that we're just getting this story, mm-hmm. and we're not necessarily going to have something big happen. And this issue. You know, nothing particularly noteworthy happens, and normally, you know, a pick happens because you know something in the story is really a big deal, or
yeah, I was kind of waiting for a thing. I was like, well, something must happen to just blow us away.
I just love these characters, and I just love this world, and the more that it's revealed, is the more I'm enjoying it. And when I sat down to decide what the pick was, and I didn't have a huge week; I only had about 10 books. The book that I by far enjoyed the most was Sex 16 because of that world building, because of the characters. And again, we talked about this book before, and it was the pick before. It's a Batman story, and that's fine because you really get to take those archetypes and play with them hear Batman, and I just like calling him the Batman character. The Batman sure. has agreed to go on a date with Catwoman. And their relationship's kind of cute.
And she's agreed to go on a date with him. It was a definite, like...
And that was the cliffhanger, like, I think, of the last issue, was she was in her apartment saying, yeah, let's go on a date.
I think we should go to dinner.
And she has conditions. I mean, that part's great. And then there's the whole part with the Killer Croc crime boss who's got his problems, and the Vicky Vale character who's fun. And then the Robin character, too. It's just really, really great world building in here. And really great character stuff from Joe Casey.
I think you're right. And I mean, the funny, because the thing that I like about it, I read that same line where we're talking about, that it's a novel. And I was like, and that sentence alone makes me so happy.
Right.
I like that to me is really enticing. That's reminds me of my favorite, kind of Vertigo books, the long runs, the big novel. Like, that's what I want out of a book. And as long as it stays interesting and the characters are all, compelling and interesting and well drawn. And I mean that in both the literal sense and sort of the, constructed, then, I'm in. And as we've gone through this, like I have never once in the, what are we on? I've never thought, oh, this is going slow. I wish we'd pick up. I haven't. I've enjoyed spending time with them. And I think that one of the things that's really interesting is that it all functions within the framework of a normal comic book, but they're taking these things that are subtext and they're shoving them out front.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stuff that we don't talk about that people have always sort of
speculated
and joked about has been the subtext of superhero comics.
The sex fetish leather costume.
And they're just presenting it straight up front, and it's not ironic.
No.
Like, there's nothing about that. It's just saying, no, yeah, they're perverts. They got a lot of stuff going on. These are the really adult concepts going on in these people's minds, and we're not hiding it.
Right.
Which is without being, it's a little lascivious, but not in a sort of bad way. I don't know how exactly to phrase that, but like, it just sort of is what it is. It's very straightforward.
It's
about
also
it.
Very real in that sense. I mean, there's sex, especially amongst consenting adults. And,
sure.
And highly charged adults and the people who have, you know, the Catwomans and the Batmans of the world, you know, that was a long bit of foreplay. That whole the lives they lived.
And even the scene in this where the reporter is in the bathroom,
right?
And it, like she's on the toilet, and you can see her underwear, and she sort of gets up. There's nothing explicit about it,
no. But
it's clearly like it's a hint to like this is gonna do it for somebody. In a very like specific way, and there's little things like that throughout the whole thing. Like there was no reason to have her in there, but it's teasing, and it plays on what some people find attractive. And there's little corners of that through the whole thing.
But it's also real, right?
That's what I was going to say.
Use the bathroom.
The next point is like it's very honest. Yeah. I think it's very brave in sort of confronting those kinds of things that people don't talk about.
Right.
But. Clearly, if you were to search certain websites, you would find that they're representatives of many of these things.
And I like the fact that the art is really straightforward.
Yeah.
Peter Kowalski is the artist, pencil and inker, and Brad Simpson's colors, which are very pop artish, and also plays with the sort of notion of comic books themselves. I mean, on the first page, you've got a bunch of purple and green panels. And there's really no reason for the lighting to be that way, as far as I can see. I could be an idiot. I don't know color theory. But it plays with the pop art aesthetic of it. A lot of these panels are very monochromatic, or is it achromatic? Monochromatic? Monochromatic.
Yeah, I'm going with that.
Where's Paul?
I still think that the color, the visual look of the color scheme always reminds me of Watchmen.
Totally.
And the tone does. It's very
and the panel layouts and everything.
It's very much like if you look at the camera angle is all down low, the chest, waist level. There's no big sweeping shots from up above. There's very little of that. So it's all sort of you're there with them. The cinematography is you know, gritty street level, you know, Scorsese, fly on the wall at best, but no crane shots if you follow me.
Comic artists hate them, especially certain ones, but it does read sort of like a storyboard. Of a show you'd watch. And that's what I kind of love about it, too, is it feels very much like I'm just watching the next episode of a weekly drama series. And sometimes you watch a show and there's a big event. Sometimes you watch a show and it's just about the characters that week. And that's what I love about this book. And I mean, it plays in the Batman tropes and that's fun. But at the end of the day, it's exploring something in comics that isn't very often explored in a very compelling way. And this is Joe Casey sort of unleashed. And it's not like in the crazy way he does it, like with Officer Down or books like that, but sort of in the comic book realm that he loves, he gets to sort of tell the full on comic story here.
Well, I mean,
superhero story, not comic story.
There is nobody. I'll say this outright: there's nobody I think who understands the form of the various types of comic books better than him, especially over a long period. Like he's a fan of comics, you know, from at least the '60s forward. He knows all those different eras and all the different things and. You know, he can play around in that context, as we've seen, in many different ways.
Right. And it's not going to be for everyone. I understand that.
No.
And if you don't like sort of long-form storytelling that's just more character-based than action-based, then that's totally fine. It's just this isn't going to be the book for you. But if you like that kind of thing, it's great. I think it's great.
And I think it's very, I think it's very adult. And I don't mean that in the, like Cinemax After Dark way.
Totally.
Yeah, but playing within the confines of these other things that are really familiar, and if you're waiting for it to be a superhero comic book it's not that. It's an extension of that or a subversion of that.
And there's been some action, and there might be some in the future, but it's mostly about the people. And I'm as excited for the date upcoming date as I am for any big. Conflict in a superhero book. I can't wait to see what happens when they go.
And I don't think it'll be a big over the top thing. You'll just sort of watch them.
No, I'm just excited for how awkward it's going to be because they're both awkward.
Verbally bumping off each other and trying to work out how to act like humans.
I look forward to that. Uh-huh. It'll be fun. So, Sex number 16 is a pick of the week, and it remains one of my favorite comics out there.
It's a very good book.
But actually, I was thinking similar to Sex is Saga 23.
I was gonna ask my first sort of thing about this was where are you with this?
Well, it's funny because Brian K. Vaughan is the master of all the things that sex doesn't do, right? He's the master of the one issue, big deal moment. He's the master of the cliffhanger. Like, he's like a savant for that sort of thing. But also, with Saga, at least, even with those elements, I feel very similar story-wise and structure-wise to Sex, because it is sort of just a long-running story about people. There's a lot more action and adventure and a lot more...
Yeah, and they also have... They've also intimated that what's going to happen, like, because because the girl is narrating, like, we know certain things are going to happen, sort of give it a different twist.
But it is sort of very meandering. You know, there isn't really a central... I mean, we follow some characters and we follow some other characters. We always get back to the main ones, but it's a much more meandering book than a lot of others. So I think... I thought, especially reading them this week, that Saga and Sex feel very similar, not just in their titling, but... This was another good issue.
I think that this one actually definitely had a feeling of a forward movement, mm-hmm. of things you know that are important happening.
Well, there was a couple of fairly major events in this issue.
Yeah, you know, Prince Robot and the dude meeting, you know, at the end, and right. You know that, like, we were told that they were going to break up, but the way that they did it is a little heartbreaking. Like, they both didn't kind of want to, but it's going to be one of those, well, it kind of happened, and then we couldn't fix it. And
right. I mean, you know, the couple's fighting, and I don't remember their name. Couple's fighting, and then the guy goes off to maybe sleep with the purple alien chick who's...
The first page is so... suggestive,
right.
And sort of telling, and she's in her t-shirt, and you're like, oh, she's and just her pose and everything, yeah. About it, it's very sexy but very real, and really, and really, and the, you know, the shots of them on the couch,
and she's, yeah. All into it, and he's wavering, and he decides no, this is not a good idea, in fact, but it's too late. He gets home and finds that his wife and family have had to bug out because they got attacked by another robot alien. And so it's sort of the heartbreaking moment of he's left to go have an affair, decides not to, and then, but it's too late anyway. So it was very, he's, you know, Vaughn's really good at the emotional truthiness of these stories. And, you know, it's a lot of, I'm sure it's a very common thing to go right, having problems and go right to the edge, pull back, and, but it's too late anyway.
I just, man, Fiona Staples is, something really special,
right?
And there's just nobody else. I can't imagine anybody else doing this. I mean, like, it really is one of those, you know, Fiona Staples is to Saga as Steve Dillon is to Preacher,
right?
You know, like, just completely essential, and nobody could have done it.
Well, look at that page way. You were talking about on the couch, and
yeah,
there's the body language of them sitting and sort of looking away from each other because it's awkward, and there's an unspoken thing happening, and then they look at each other, and there's the great facial expression on her face. You know exactly what she's thinking, and you know exactly what he's thinking, and yeah. There's no dialogue whatsoever.
It's interesting how human these characters are for not being humans.
Right. Her nose does freak me out, I'll be honest.
Totally. Totally shit. She's, you know what she reminds? She's like Dr. Evazan.
Right. I don't even mind the ears. You know, don't mind the ears. It's the nose. Mm-hmm. The nose is a little...
You like the ragged punk rock t-shirt?
I like that.
Yeah, I don't mind
that at all.
Yeah, I like, really. She was the one. I'm trying to go back. Like, there was the IDW miniseries with Steve Niles.
Yeah, yeah,
that was her, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really liked that miniseries.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I totally remember that.
She's blown up real fast, as she should.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm kind of like, oh, we saw her a long time ago and saw that coming.
Yeah.
But since then, she's just excellent. They're like so. So few lines and such great expression, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Go Canada.
Now, did you read Superman Doomed number 2?
No, I looked at it and I thought it was a collection of the things that I'd already read.
Yeah, it was because they haven't been very good at telling you what comes next. But this was supposedly the wrap-up, and it is the wrap-up of the Superman Doomed storyline that we've been reading. And I'm just going to have to spoil it for you. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm not.
And it's good. It's an extra long story that wraps up the storyline of Superman being infected with the Doomsday particles and becoming Doomsday himself, and we had Batman and Wonder Woman and Steel and Lana Lang and Lois Lane all involved. And what was interesting about it was, so Brainiac was revealed to be, and also Supergirl's in here, Brainiac was revealed to be the big bad guy here. He was planning the invasion of Earth, or the collection of Earth. And so they, of course, thwart his plans, and they send him into a black hole and he gets collected by his own machine, I think it is. And he goes through a portal on the last page, and he finds himself looking at these shards of glass or rock or ice. Anyway, they're reflecting images, and all the images are of pre-52 superheroes.
Hmm.
So it's Superman with the trunks and old Nightwing and old Justice Society with Jay Garrick and the tin pot hat and very interesting what's going on here. Now there's some speculation it's having to do with the event that's coming up, that DC's doing while they move offices.
Mm-hmm.
You know about that, how they're taking a month off of their regular books while they move. So there's some special event coming out that month where it's all going to be wacky inter-Earth adventures. Or it could be something else. I don't know, but I just wasn't expecting to turn or to swipe the page and be faced with a shot of Superman in the trunks, flying at me.
They're gonna have to. They're gonna have to go back.
We'll see.
Like they're gonna have to. There's no way. This is comic books. They come back to life.
They will go back when certain people are no longer in charge, and or they really need to boost sales again.
Yeah.
When those things happen, I don't know. But it was a shocker to turn the page and see all those old costumes.
Mm-hmm.
So wasn't expecting to see that. Now we never talk about Deadpool unless it's one of those wacky issues.
And that's why we're talking about it, because it wasn't. No, it was not. And that's one of the things I find it very hard to stay consistent with Deadpool, mm-hmm. in that I just. I've talked about this before, but like there's certain things I am programmed not to notice or see, so I just forget about it. And for the
you
most
don't see
part,
color.
Yeah,
you don't see
I don't
race.
See color. I'm not about that. No,
you
but it's just like
age.
I ignored Deadpool for so long that it's difficult to remember that I'm actually reading it. And this is 35 issues of a consistent team of Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn doing this character, and it's been one, if not necessarily one long story, it's all interconnected and has been. And it's oddly, I think the thing that struck me about it, the thing I wanted to bring up, is like it's very sweet. Like it has really turned into like he's got like a family of characters around him, and it's taken the thing that I didn't like about Deadpool is it was just like a bunch of wacky shit and there wasn't much to grab onto other than the wacky shit.
Right.
And like he's got a family now, you know, the agent who's now in the, I can't think of her name.
Is Ghost Ben Franklin still in it?
No, but he could be at any point. The guy, like the dude who teleports them from that was in it. Mm-hmm. And now he's got a wife who's like a demon, and he's got these characters from, there was the storyline from North Korea where there was all like the copycat X-Men that they engineered, and like that's been an ongoing thing. And he's got a daughter now that came out of one of those wacky weird episodes. Like, so even those mattered. And I think Declan Shalvey's in this. I'm not sure, as a homeless person. And then he yells, "Jesus!" Maybe it just
is this a double ship book?
It must be. 35 issues.
Yeah,
it has to be. I mean, I feel like I just read it last week.
Who's drawing at this point?
This is Mike Hawthorne.
Oh, wow.
Whose work I like a lot. This is a solid penciler. I mean, it started with Tony Moore, I think. I'm trying to remember.
Do you find it as one of your favorite Marvel books?
I don't know that I would say it's my favorite. I don't get done with it and go, man, I love that. But
right.
Is it the point where it's kind of comforting to go back to? Right. And I'm always a little pleasantly surprised that I'm joining it, and I sort of know who the whole cast is, and I know what the ongoing thing is, and they really write Deadpool with an underlying sadness and sweetness that actually really underpins some of the jokes and things.
Well, that's kind of the trick, right? I mean, I think the reason why you and I at least weren't really into Deadpool before was from whenever I read him, he was very one note.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a Deadpool fan will come along and tell us that he wasn't always that way, and that's always possible, but whenever I would encounter him, he'd be very one note, and that note was annoying. So,
no, it didn't. It didn't hurt.
That's how you make the character more interesting, is you give him more than.
It didn't hurt that when Remender using him in Uncanny X-Force didn't hurt.
No,
I think that was like a sort of like it can be good and it can be interesting. Yeah, it's been a good time.
So what's happening in this issue?
a lot of things. I mean, like, he's still dealing with the fact that he has this daughter that he found out about, and he set her up at the agent. I can't think of her damn name, which is a problem. Agent Preston. He set her up in her house to protect her, and and then at one point, Dracula is really mad about, because Dracula wanted his wife. And he sort of screwed him over, and so Dracula didn't get the woman that he wanted. So Dracula implants him. He was very badly hurt, and he implants his consciousness into an ancient spider slayer. And like, he tries to attack him, and Deadpool just runs down the subway where the spider slayer can't fit, and that's the end of that. And then he arranges for a bunch of the North Korean X-Men copies to be brought to the school, because they're all dying because they were poorly engineered. And, you know, he really cares about them. And
interesting.
It's like a lot of sort of things going on. It wasn't like a big thing that happened in it. I just was like, 35 issues, man. That's not nothing.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah, and like there's a heart and soul in it. So
especially these days, it's a pretty big run.
It certainly is. Although Marvel's been really consistent. You know, like if they can keep the people on the books and they ship them, you know, three times a month, then it's not so bad.
36 just came out.
Yeah.
So did you read G.I. Joe number one?
I think I did.
It's the latest incarnation of G.I. Joe from IDW. It's volume 75 at this point. I don't know what volume number it is, but
I was like, I was like, wait, there's a new G.I. Joe? You're like, yeah, and I was like, all right. So
this one's volume 4 of IDW. So this is the fourth series.
So there was at least a couple from Devil's Due before that, and then Marvel. I don't think Marvel rebooted it then.
But. No, not back then. So yeah. This what's interesting about this issue, it's the first time G.I. Joe has been written by a woman, Karen Travis. And I picked it up because I'd heard about that. I thought the cover was cool. I didn't know.
Which one? There's 100 covers.
Right, the orange one.
Yeah.
The really sort of
stylized one. That's the best one.
Yeah. But I didn't know much about it. I didn't know if it was a continuation. It is a continuation of the story from IDW. But what I thought was really interesting about it was, and I didn't love it, but what I thought was interesting about it was that for G.I. Joe number one, it was mostly talking about budgets.
I was going to say, I figured our conversation was going to be here why it failed.
I didn't really like it.
I didn't like it at all.
I don't have a really desire to read it anymore, but I thought it was a bold choice to go that way.
I thought it was a bad choice because if you're going to label something as a number one, I was lost.
Right.
And I read G.I. Joe Cobra for a really long time. That's really the only one that I stuck with. And it seems like these are the same people from that. But it was such an odd tone. It was like being dropped in the middle of chapter 15 of some sort of like spy military novel. And I didn't know who anybody was other than like when Roadblock or Scarlet would show up.
Right.
And Tomax was around. Like I haven't read the other book in so long.
I think you have an obligation in your first issue to sort of reset a little bit and at least identify everyone.
And this writer, I believe she's some sort of novelist.
Yeah, she's a novelist.
Classic novelist first comic book.
Yeah.
Like just jumped in there. You know, Greg Rucka can do this, but not everybody can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like to sort of do that sort of writing in the story like this. And there was no setup. There was no establishing shot, basically.
Yeah, I think the problem with a book like this is that it's for the people that read the first three volumes.
Yeah.
And you should try to bring on new readers or at least make it welcoming in the first issue, especially if you're bringing in a quote-unquote mainstream writer who has their own fans.
If we were both lost, I mean, that says something.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's the G.I. Joe characters and I know them.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily know who everyone was, but I knew, you know, enough. Mm-hmm. I just didn't find it super compelling. I thought it was interesting. So the idea is that Cobra has realized they've failed as international terrorist organization determined to rule the world. And so now they've sort of rebranded themselves and they're sort of a peacekeeping force. They're sort of like not mercenaries, but they're not terrorists anymore. They don't call themselves terrorists anymore, and so they have embassies and they are hired to mediate international disputes.
That is a tough pivot.
It's a tough pivot
to make for an organization. I mean, I've been in organizations that made a pivot that seemed pretty rough, but terrorist to that is. That's
well, one
special.
Man's terrorist, another man's freedom fighter, and
I guess so.
The part I did like the best about this was the internal strife within Cobra about that decision. So, like, you know, Tomax and Zaymot, or at least, well, isn't one of them dead?
Yes.
Yeah. So
don't know which. This is Tomax. I think Zaymot's dead. I did like the picture of him up behind his desk and his brother, like, in their cobra outfits.
If I could get a giant painting of those two guys, I'd hang it at my office.
You're not wrong. Yes, but, dear brother, we should commute right away.
Tomax is in charge. He's sort of the public face, and Baroness is not happy with it. And I like the idea that the sort of cadets, there's a split. And that's interesting. That could probably lead to some interesting stories. But I just didn't find it super compelling.
There can be no Baroness in a comic book without a half-panel butt shot. Like, there's just
He's looking around it. It's like, I don't know why you... Excuse me, your ass is in the way. I need maybe to... He's,
well, technically, her front parts are in the way.
Right. Her hips.
Maybe he's trying to see around the backside of it.
Oh, God. Oh, G.I. Joe. I can't stay mad at them forever.
I can't either, but it was just like, really? This is I don't know who thought that was a good idea, just from a marketing standpoint. Just like, let's throw them in the deep end. Like, because if you think about it, this was not a book written for people who you tend to think of as you know, a potential G.I. Joe audience.
Which I found it ballsy. I really did. I mean, there's a whole Senate committee on budgets, and then they talk about the Senate committee on budgets, and then, you know, that's not your typical G.I. Joe story. So that's kind of interesting.
Sure, sure, sure.
And I like the idea of the Senate saying, you know, you've defeated Cobra. They're now no longer international terrorist organization.
I thought that was very interesting and realistic.
So we're going to have to cut your funding now. And that's, you know, that's interesting.
Sure.
I would have liked it more if Shipwreck had been in it. I'm just going to say it right now.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Exactly.
Bad Jack Nicholson Shipwreck.
If you add him in the background, I will at least pick up the second issue. So that was G.I. Joe number one.
You still reading All New Invaders number 10?
Yes. And God, I really hate Captain America's costume in this story.
Just, you have to just ignore it. Just like every character in DC.
It's like there's this one page where, you know, at the very end where he and Namor are arguing and Namor leaves. And it's the top panel where he's sort of grimacing at Namor. And the helmet's just so... And I get they're trying to recreate the sort of World War II helmet look. Mm-hmm. But
that helmet is terrible.
It's just, I can't take him seriously. It just doesn't. Yeah. It just looks dumb. At least make the helmet a separate piece. That, at least in the film, when he's wearing that costume, it works because the helmet's a helmet. Here are like the masks attached to it, and
it just looks like an egghead weirdo.
It just looks like the helmet's too big. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I've been reading this.
That being said, the design's notwithstanding, I really dug. I dug the art in this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, when he's drawing
Steve Pugh. It's nice. It actually reminds me of Epting on Captain America a little bit. It's sort of the way that that was produced, I suppose.
And he's similar in style and tone to the original artist in this, who was what's his name from Justice Society, who we liked so much.
Yeah, who I can't remember right now.
God, we're old and dumb.
Yeah, it's fine. I used to have a memory, and it was so great. But anyways, what I wanted to bring it up is that I think this is a really sort of ballsy book going on right now in terms of what Marvel is doing in general. This is very, I mean, it's a little bit, you can see them kind of try to build up some of their IPs a little bit and see if they can get some interest in it. But I like that it's very different than the other books, and I like that James Robinson is totally the right guy to do it.
Yeah.
Where you're taking all of these, they're really starting to delve in and bring back a lot of these Golden Age characters, and I love the Invaders. That might be my favorite Marvel.
I still remember when I was a kid going to Comic-Con in New York. It might have been Big Apple Comic-Con at the time. I don't remember the name of it. With my dad, and buying a giant stack of Roy Thomas Invaders comics.
Yeah. I have a stack of them in the basement, and I just haven't been able to read them, but I know they're there, and someday I will read them.
Yeah.
It's
a great team. Great concept.
It's a great team. And you had the really cool, like Steve Rogers. If Steve Rogers confronts Namor about the Illuminati.
Yeah.
Way to pull that out from nowhere. Like it's very Marvel.
It's like when you've done something really bad to your wife or girlfriend, and then like you think you've gone past it, and 6 months later it just pops up again.
This is like 5 years later. This is a long time.
Listen, buddy.
Ah, so good. And then, like, they had, you know, they've got all these other characters. Besides the Invaders, you've got, you know, they brought in all the British guys. Destroyer and Union Jack and Spitfire.
I always liked Union Jack.
I love Union Jack and Spitfire.
Yeah.
I was remembering when Spitfire showed up, I was like, oh, man, remember how good she was in Paul Cornell's, What was the title?
MI13.
Yes, exactly. You know, and like that was great.
Yep.
It was good to see her. There's the Vision, and like there's been enough that's happened to even the four main characters. You know, Toro and Torch and Bucky and Cap and Namor, five characters. You know that they're really interesting. Their chemistry is really interesting.
And they have the history, which makes it more interesting. I like that Jim Hammond stays on brand by labeling himself Agent of Nothing. what's also interesting with this book was continuing the idea of the elevation of the Inhumans.
Yeah.
So the villain they're fighting, the Iron Cross, is that the name, right? She was the Iron Cross, which is basically the British Iron Man. The German Iron Man, I'm sorry, of course, German. And
German will fear us.
She realizes she's got the Inhuman gene, and it's very much like the X gene or the mutant gene, and she becomes she has powers all of a sudden. So
that concept threatens to spilleth over.
Well, they're pushing it real hard right now.
No,
it's gonna get annoying.
We all know why,
right?
But we're not gonna talk about it. But Inhuman this week is a good book. It's interesting. It's Charles Soule. It's not a big surprise, but I'm reading that and I'm enjoying that too. Yeah.
So I still really like this book. I mean, great characters and it's really fun.
Yeah, I'm totally excited. We get to have the British characters too. Like this, I'll take these guys all day.
Right. So this was an all new Invaders number 10, and I also like the Scott Collins cover. I don't normally look at the covers these days, but. When I saw that cover, I was like, he could draw this series, and I'd be okay with that.
He could totally draw this series. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So you can pick up the collection of this book or any of the books we talked about or anything you want at ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you'll find the link to Amazon that gives us a little bit of piece of the action. It doesn't come out of your pocket. It comes out of Amazon's pocket. It's called an affiliate link, for all those who want to know. And it's how we pay the bills, pay the server costs, pay new microphone bills, all kinds of things. The server cost is not in
probably use a new cost. Microphone.
You could probably use a new microphone. My microphone, I have the blue Yeti, and I saw one last week at an office. They used it for their conference room, and
nice.
It was brand new. Mm-hmm. And a fellow iFanboy writer, Mike Romo, was there, and he went, "That does not look like your microphone because my microphone, I think, is covered in bacteria."
My microphone is even older than yours.
Yeah, but it's like the pop screen and
the little switches stopped working.
So. If you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, that's how you can help the show out, keep everything running.
I can't
running.
Even get to the switch. It's inside it now.
ifanboy.com/registration is also how you can help directly by becoming an iFanboy member at $3 a month or $30 a year. It helps us directly. We appreciate everyone who does both those things, and thank you very much. Well, soon we'll get Josh a new mic. Now,
please, sir. You can barely hear me. Hello? Is anyone out there at all?
Secret Avengers. Number 8 came out this week, and I don't know how I feel about this book.
I haven't been reading it. Who's even on it anymore?
This is Alice Cott, who does Zero over at Image.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of different artists have worked on it.
I know who Alice Cott is.
Right. And I'm speaking to you and the audience at the same time.
I felt like you were talking to me. Like, hey, dumbass, I know you had the baby. You don't get sleep enough. You're not exactly the steel trap you used to be back in the 90s.
So, well, that's also true. But,
Hey, babe, I haven't remembered anything that badly since the Clinton administration. Bah, bah,
bah. I'm glad we were able to take time out of our incessant watching of Saturday Night Live videos online to do the show. So this book is very much in the Hawkeye corner of the Marvel Universe. You know, there's a couple of books that were tonally similar to Hawkeye.
Yes.
And so this is one of them, and it also includes Hawkeye in the team. And so it's very kind of goofy and jokey. You know, it's got the jokey captions and everything. And it's sometimes it's way too precious, but it's also kind of interesting and fun. And it includes MODOK as a main character, and I think MODOK is an awesome, you know, one of those crazy Marvel concepts that is fun to play with. And the problem with the book is sometimes it's a very fine line to be too silly or too wacky or too weird, and Matt Fraction always walked the line really, really well. Hawkeye, this one occasionally falls over it, but I find something about it really charming. Basically, it's Spider-Woman and Black Canary, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Maria Hill, Agent Coulson, and then fake Nick Fury, and they're the Secret Avengers, and then MODOK has been the whole thing of the storyline is that MODOK was captured, he was turned against AIM, and he became sort of an advisor to S.H.I.E.L.D. And now he's this issue, in flashbacks we've seen that he's been engineering from behind the scenes to become the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. He wants to be MODOK director of S.H.I.E.L.D., which would be a lot of acronyms, but would be kind of, it's kind of silly to even think he could be the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. or that he even thinks he could, but in this issue, you see all the things that have been happening in the story so far has been him engineering from the background in order to supplant Maria Hill as director. And then at the end of this issue, he also reveals he's actually in love with Maria Hill. So it's a weird book.
But, is it funny? Like, is that tongue-in-cheek?
It's funny and tongue-in-cheek in the same way Hawkeye is.
Okay.
That seems to be a thing. The art's really interesting. It's very... the artist is Michael Walsh, and it looks kind of like Steve Lieber. And it's the same tone, you know, Superior Foes of Spider-Man was also in that sort of corner of the Marvel Universe that Steve Lieber drew. And, you know, it's silly. And every time it comes out, I look at it and go, do I want to keep reading this? And I waver. And then I always end up reading it and enjoying it. It's only number 8. So if you like Hawkeye, or if you think the idea of MODOK engineering his own ascension to become the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. sounds like something you'd enjoy.
That is compelling. I'm not going to lie to you. That's compelling. But it's funny because it's a very similar, like, there's a formula that's going on is to stick a bad guy on the team now.
Right.
That's, you know, it was the Thunderbolts had that with
they're even doing it at DC with
the leader.
With Lex Luthor and the Justice League.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's the thing now. To do. What is Bodies?
Bodies is the sort of Jack the Ripper type book from Vertigo. And I was hoping
that you had checked.
Well, it takes place over multiple timelines. So part of it takes place in what would have been, Victorian England during the Ripper murders. Part of it takes place during the 1940s. Part of it takes place in present day. And then part of it takes place in the not terribly distant future.
Interesting.
And there are these bodies that they find. And unfortunately, I have no idea what's going on.
So you were hoping that I read it and could tell you?
Kind of, yeah. I thought maybe that was because it's Ripper. It's Jack. You like Jack the Ripper, I know.
So what you did was you threw a Hail Mary pass in the script. You were like, I don't understand what's going on. I'm just going to put it in the script, and hopefully someone else has read it and can tell me. What's
also,
happening.
There's a larger lesson going on here, and it's the death knell of what was Vertigo.
Hmm.
And it's like every time a new series comes out, I give it a shot.
Right.
And it's just swing and a miss one after another. And other than that one miniseries, the Royals, Masters of War that we loved, nothing.
Well, the problem is all the talent went to they took their books to Image.
Well,
and they haven't really Vertigo hasn't broken anyone new, and I don't know if that's by choice.
Well, it doesn't seem like anybody. Okay, so nobody established seems to be bringing their stuff to Vertigo.
No, because all Image, the deal's better.
It is, but. I mean, the difference would be that you can sort of make your living up front at Vertigo.
Well,
in theory.
We've had creators tell us they would have brought this book to Vertigo in the past, but now because the deal they changed the deal.
Yes, they did. They did it. Yeah, they did that a while ago. But I think it took a while to crack in where the power of the deal that you get from somebody like Image overtook the prestige of having a Vertigo book. Because for a lot of guys who have come up. You know, like the thing was, who have come up in the last, you know, 5-10 years, the thing was, you know, they were reading Vertigo stuff in the 90s and 2000s, and it was like to get one of those series of Vertigo, you know, and it turns out that, you know, Jason Aaron's going to be one of, you know, the way it's looking now, one of the last guys to have one of those runs.
Right.
You know, Mike Carey's still working on one on the he's already done one with Lucifer, but he's still working on one with the Unwritten, and the Unwritten's still good, and Fables
American
is.
Empire.
Yeah, and those are all good, but like they're from before, they haven't had one. In a while, that has grabbed me. That
and Karen
seemed
Berger's
like a longevity,
gone.
And that's the other thing. And it really is since Karen Berger's been gone, this is what we're seeing. And I'm not mean to say she didn't have any real hits for a while.
Right.
And like there was a pretty long period of time where you know something wasn't hitting. But it's just so sad. So I keep trying this book, but it's pretty British, and I am an American who's pretty familiar with Britain. Like I watch a lot of British TV and I read books and I can follow along with a lot of it. And the most interesting story is there's a Muslim female, DS, I think that's Detective Sergeant, and part of her storyline. And I just wanted to read that part. Like that part was great.
So should I read this book?
I don't know. I'm kind of not ready to quit, but I don't know what's happening. And I like when they switch timelines, I either get completely engrossed with it or I completely check out. And it's a problem. So I'll let you know. I'm not ready to be done with it yet.
I'm going to wait for your recommendation.
Okay.
So speaking of Vertigo, so Batman Eternal 25, So I never know who's going to draw the issue, because there's 15 writers on this book, and so the credit list and on the cover is so long, I don't even look at it. So I turn the first page, and the first page is Vicki Vale and the current commissioner of the GCPD, Bard, I think Jason Bard. They're talking in her newsroom, and I'm like, wow, who is this artist? This is very familiar. It looks really good. Who is this? And so I turn the page again, and it's fucking R.M. Guerra.
Wow. We just got R.M. Guerra.
Yeah.
And Thor last week.
And the thing that's most interesting about Batman Eternal is that they've done a lot of interesting artists on this book. Are guys who don't normally or would never normally draw a DC book or a Batman book. There was a guy a couple of weeks ago or months ago, you'll remember, Paul and I said looked very much like Rafael Grampa. Mm-hmm. A guy that would never get to draw a DC book. And here you've got R.M. Guerra, who drew Scalped for so many years with Jason Aaron, doing a Batman book. And he's really strong on the sidekicks. Mm. Like Red Robin, because he was never Robin. Red Robin, Harper Row, Red Hood, or Jason Todd, whatever the fuck his name is now. They look great. His Batman is a little rough. Mm. But the character work is wonderful. Great Barbara Gordon, great Jim Gordon. And it's the Guerra you know and love from Scalped. This Batman looks a little shiny. The cowl's a little big, but the rest of it looks great. And
I'm gonna wanna look into this.
And considering most of the issue is the sidekicks, so it really works really well. And there's a great scene in the middle where, in the last couple issues, Alfred was attacked by Hush. He was injected with the fear toxin right into his brain, so he's in the hospital. And so then Jason Todd and Tim Drake have a little meeting in the hospital room, and it's a really great scene between the two of them. And so, and I love this. I haven't really loved the series, but I do love parts of it. I love the flirtatious interaction between Tim Drake and Harper Row. They're sort of becoming a bickering item throughout the series, which I like. They're really good together. So it was great. As far as art wise,
Tim Drake is the only Robin.
He's not even a Robin, Josh. He's never, never Robin. He's Red Robin.
That's stupid.
Red Robin, young. That's all he is. He's never Robin.
Wow, look at this.
You were looking
at it. That's fascinating.
Now?
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's really interesting.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, the Batman's rough, but the rest of it's good.
It's not the same colorist he had on Scalped.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to mention was it's not colored. It's a little over-colored. It's not. Yeah, and so that hurts a little.
Also,
bit.
Really didn't like the coloring on the G.I. Joe book.
Yeah.
Just want to bring that up. Sorry.
Yeah,
that was
coloring,
the other problem.
The coloring here doesn't help. This is very hard, shadowing stuff. But I love the sidekick stuff. It's good stuff.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I don't want him to start doing this stuff.
I don't, you know.
He colored it.
No,
Julia Brusco.
Yeah.
You know what? I think that is his scalp colorist.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really work here.
Yeah. We get there.
But interesting. I think he's, isn't he doing another book with Jason Aaron? I'm pretty sure he is.
I hope so. Yeah. That would be the correct thing.
Yeah. So
that would be what you should do.
I made a little noise when I turned the page and saw his name.
Eep. What did he say? Said eep, ma'am.
So there you go. Those are the comics of this week. It was a little light week. We didn't have tons of comics, but it was still some good stuff to talk about. You can go to fanboy.com. You can find the post for this show. You can talk about these books or other books that came out this week. If there were other artists that surprised you, perhaps that might be interesting to find out about.
All right. So let us move on to the things that you have brought for us to talk about.
Some emails.
Yeah, I'm going to do the first one.
Okay.
We're going to get this question from Alex from Somerville, Massachusetts. Somerville. Nice theater down there in Somerville. It's a statue that's weird outside, but I still went and I saw Colin Malloy play
what
there.
What statue?
Colin was talking about the statue the whole time. It's this really strange statue. I don't remember what it is now. But there's a great barbecue place called Red Bones. It's a little bit expensive, but they're huge supporters of the New England Mountain Bike Association.
Was it Ted Williams?
No, it's
I
like...
I just figured
like,
there's statues of Ted Williams all over.
No, it's like a weird artsy-fartsy statue. And when you're talking about something, I'm going to look it up and I'm going to tell you.
Is it like a new interpretation of Ted Williams?
I don't believe it has anything to do with Ted Williams. Ted Williams wasn't no. You're not even in the right neighborhood. That's like Somerville's a little.
You don't know that it's not like a new wave interpretation of Big Poppy.
I barely know who that is, and I'd rather talk about Ted Williams because at least then I have some footing.
I figured from mere osmosis of being in New England, you would know who David Ortiz was.
I know who it is in the same way that like I knew who David Wright was because I lived in Queens.
Okay.
I saw it on jerseys a lot, but I mean, literally.
I figured you would have bought a David Ortiz jersey just to blend in and not hear about that's, it. All the
time. If you would think a thing like that, then you know nothing about me. Alex from Somerville, Mass. I love the new Cyclops series. I haven't cared about the X-Men in years, but this is hitting all of my buttons. Are there major canon divergences or spin way, way off that you prefer to the original series? Also, what's the best comic version of the X-Men available right now?
So, Cyclops also came out this week. It was a nice ending to that story arc.
Yes.
That was good. That's been good. Greg Rucka.
Very good.
Been a good series. It's interesting because I was thinking about this question after reading it, and it is kind of strange to take a character like Cyclops and just sort of send him into space.
He's also it's not Cyclops Prime, it's like sub-Cyclops.
Right.
And then also you're putting him in a situation that is not like him, because Cyclops, you think of him as he's the leader of the X-Men, he's very political and Earth-involved.
And now he's space pirate.
Yeah, which is great.
Which is fun. And then they're doing that with Winter Soldier, almost the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. They're sitting him into space, which is sort of a spin way, way, way
off.
Listen,
this doesn't usually work. I don't think.
No, I was thinking about it too, also involving space, and it's kind of not exactly the same, but when they sent Starman into space for however long that was, that was sort of, I mean, it was his story, so it's not like they spend him off.
Also,
but
he's called Starman, so right. It kind
of
worked.
But they took him out of the main now story in Opal Bowie City, and they sent him into space, which was sort of a divergence, mm-hmm. Which worked. And also, kind of the similar would be the year of the 6 months of the Preacher that went to the past.
Yeah,
like the diverging from the main story,
or like the one issue that went back to one or two issues that went back to Vietnam. And right. Went to his dad.
Wasn't there a whole six issues that was his dad? Wasn't there a whole trade of that?
No, I think it was just a couple issues. It was two issues, I think. Mm. With space and then the other guy who got killed.
So there's where
he looked exactly like Jesse Custer, and it was the exact same version. The character was the exact same as the Punisher.
Oh, wait, I know one. Recently, Captain America. Where he
was
mentioned for 9 or 10 issues.
Well, I don't know if this counts, but when they killed Bruce Wayne and they did Batman RIP, mm-hmm. and there's actually two things you can do on this. Those were mostly fun. Mm-hmm. The Batman RIPs where he was in all the different places, so you get to see Batman.
Something. RIP was with the Joker and the thing.
Okay, well.
Something.
Whatever. Yes. You know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
So that was kind of fun and that was cool. But then at the same time, over in the Detective Comics books, it was when Snyder first took over with Jock, it was Dick Grayson as Batman, which right. really was a big, like, we hadn't seen that before.
Well, we did in the 90s.
Yeah, but not in a while. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that really counts. But, Batman running around through time, that works every once in a while. Trying to remember.
Well, I mean, if you want to go back into the Silver Age, I mean, that happened all the fucking time. I mean,
well, that was because that was what you could do in comics,
right? I mean,
that's what Silver Age Superman comics were,
right? Or even Batman. There was Batman and Robin running around fighting aliens and punching giant robots and shit. Yeah. I mean, the thing that's fun about these characters is you can take them into places like that and do really bizarre things. I like seeing Cyclops having to deal with the space world. This is not a world he's comfortable in. He's got a sword now, and he's sexy aliens.
You know, it was a good one. Was Adventures in Space? Was it Adventures in Space with Animal Man, Starfire, and Adam Strange? Adam Strange?
Yes,
that was great.
Yes,
who wrote that?
Someone who was good at comics.
Yeah, but it was like one of those series that nobody talked about. I remember, it was only half the issue.
Right.
That was a spinoff.
Well, That was in 52.
It was a spinoff from 52.
Right.
So that was really good in 52. And then they Adventures in
Those are all fun things. You can always take You can, but it's hard to go wrong when you take a character and put him in an unusual, you know, it's a classic fish out of water story. But
what's the Hulk one? The Planet Hulk.
Planet Hulk. Yeah.
That's a famous example.
These involve sending characters into space.
I think. Well, I mean, they're Earth and they're
I'm not
space.
Blaming us. I'm just saying that's what the examples are.
Yeah. Well, that seems to work. It's a good formula, is what we're realizing.
Right.
It's fine. What's the best version of the comics of X-Men right now?
All new X-Men.
All new X-Men.
Yeah. Although Uncanny is really good. It's just all new X-Men. If I had to pick one, I'd read all new X-Men.
Yeah, sure. I'm totally ready for them to get rid of the old X-Men. I don't care.
Send those dour bitches to space.
This is just like, get rid of Mary Jane. Fine, do it. Whatever. I don't care. I have no connection to it anymore. Tell me good stories.
Thank you, Alex from Somerville. If you want to email us, you can email contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY 326-2697. So there you go. We have a special edition podcast you should know about. It came out last week. The day after this show is the Paul and I talking about the Gotham pilot. So if you watched Gotham, many millions of people did, and you wanted to hear what Paul and I had to think about it, you can go back in the feed right behind this show. You can find our special edition show, about 30 minutes talking about Gotham. And you can look forward in next month to hearing us talk about the Flash pilot and the Constantine pilot. Not Constantine, Josh. Constantine.
It's bloody Constantine.
Not on that show. It's not. So that'll be fun. We'll be talking about those pilots and probably also talking in the future about the other pilots that happened. We just happened to have those scheduled because they're all coming up soon. So head over to ifanboy.com to find that discussion. If you've watched Gotham, tell us what you thought about it. It'll be fun. In the meantime, as I said just moments ago, head over to ifanboy.com to come on this show, talk about this week's books, find all of our other podcasts. Everything that we talk about is happening at ifanboy.com.
That's true. You can follow us on the internets.
What the fuck is this?
That's the statue. We're going to get to that in a second. You can follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy. Facebook. It's a weird statue, right?
So in the middle of this discussion, Josh sends me a link through the little chat room that we use to keep track of the time, and there's a picture of the statue. I don't understand what's going on.
And you can follow us on Twitter at CS Kilpatrick, Jay Flanagan, or Paul is at Fuzzy Typewriter. And you can see what the pick of the week is going to be as soon as we pick it ahead of the show, so you can try to make sure you read it. And sometimes we put some other stuff up there. You know, we're going to help where we can. It's
and finally, red review.
Probably not going to retweet your Kickstarter. No, probably not going to.
Finally, if you write, I'm sorry, I'm still mind blown by the statue. Finally, if you like this show, write a review on iTunes. It helps people find podcasts, and it takes only a moment of your time, and we really appreciate it. And not just for this show, but for any podcast you enjoy, it really helps those shows out. The best way you can do that, the quickest way, and the cheapest way is to write a review on iTunes. So let's discuss this statue.
Okay, so this is the statue.
Just in case anyone's wondering, we're going to put a link to the statue in the show notes.
Yeah. So you know this is in Somerville, Mass., and it's three human figures about life size. One of them in this is wearing a skirt, but I think that was added later by somebody, so that you should disregard that.
Okay.
It's a man in a suit, and he's looking down with his arms crossed at another figure who's on the ground, sort of cowing backwards on their knees as an old lady looks on in the distance.
What is... I don't understand this.
Yeah, so when you say Somerville, Mass., that's what I think of.
Looks like the guy got his hand chopped off and he's holding the stump.
Yeah, and they kind of have like mime masks on.
Yeah, it looks like Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
If you're from Somerville, Mass., and you know what the fuck's up with the statue, please email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a comment in the comment section because... I would like to be able to sleep again.
Yeah, it's a heck of a statue.
I'd like to be on the planning committee who was given the plans for the statues and said, "Here's what we're gonna do," and they said, "Yes."
Yeah,
that's so weird.
It's very weird. I know.
Jesus, you know what they should have done is a statue of Simon and Simon.
They should do a whole '80s TV show statue park, like in Washington D.C. There should be a memorial.
I spent a good amount of time this week talking to somebody at HBO trying to convince them to do True Detective Season 3 as a Simon and Simon reunion. And that is not a lie.
I think that you may be missing the spirit of the show.
I'm just saying. It doesn't even have to be the characters, just the actors.
I feel like you're trying to fit something into a vase that it doesn't necessarily belong in.
Because the best part about it is you could have Tom Selleck show up.
I don't understand what you're saying because I don't really know the show, but...
And then the guys from Hardcastle and McCormick, and then you have
I'm sure that some nerd out there is like, "Yep, Fucking A, Connor. You knew.
Listen, I'm just saying, if you had a Simon and Simon reunion on True Detective, it would be the biggest thing on TV.
You know what? I might be willing to take that bet. Because...
And I know you're listening, HBO people. We had this discussion earlier. I'm not done. I'm gonna write up a treatment. So that's what I'm gonna do all week. Until then, I'm Connor.
I am Josh. And that's it. That's all there is right now.
See you next week.
We're okay at this. We can do this.